You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Halloween episode. That's why the font looks a little spooky there, if you haven't noticed already. You see it right there. That's the font for today. But you know what? What's better than the font is a rallying Big Rat 310 here with us for episode 258. I know you're a little under the weather, but besides that, are you feeling okay?
Yeah. I mean, battling a pretty nasty, what seems like a viral illness right now, but, yeah, other than that, I'm doing all right. Excited to talk some ball.
As we watch a team last week who, so lost because of their own demise, which was poetic justice for me to see. But I know, like, we're on two different ends of the spectrum when it comes to the NFL football from last weekend.
Yeah. But thankfully, I can, because it was a non-conference game, I can kind of get over it a little bit easier than normal. The Bills loss definitely hurt more. But yeah, good on you guys. And thank you. You guys helped us out by giving them a loss in the division.
You know what? I look at it right now where I have the motto of expect to lose, hope to win, and it's what we did. So the only thing I have to say about this game really is Buffalo, I feel like, has to kill them. If they don't, that's where I think some serious red flags. Because if Tampa covers here, I think it looks like, oh, hey, Buffalo, you haven't covered in four games.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. This one's tricky because I'm just curious. Like, the Buffalo Bills defense is obviously, like, not as good as they used to be without Milano, Daquan Jones, and Trey White. And we've probably talked about it on the show before, but Daquan Jones was, like, leading the NFL in pressure rate from D tackles before he got hurt. And that was a massive, massive loss. And the Bills defense of old in this spot, Baker Mayfield on a short week would, like, sack him five times and force two turnovers. Is this Bills defense capable of doing that? I do not know. So that should make it interesting.
Because also for the Bills, too, after this game, it's Bengals, Broncos, Jets, and Eagles, which is not necessarily easy, except for, I would say, one of those games.
Yeah, and the Bengals game is on Sunday Night Football in Cincinnati. It's a pretty tough spot.
It's also going to have a lot of emotion behind it for obvious reasons.
Yeah, same building where the Damar Hamlin thing happened.
Exactly. But you know what?
Continue.
The one thing I was going to say is, you know what's better than Thursday Night Football is a whole, like, we have a full slate. The NFL is so weird with their scheduling. How last week six teams were on a bye. This week, no one's on a bye.
Yeah, it's very strange. I'm guessing the only reason I could think of why they did that is maybe they want more games available most weeks. So maybe the new format is instead of four teams going on bye every week, it's more like six teams will go on by one week, none will go on by the next week, so we can kind of, like, limit the amount of teams that are unavailable at the same time as often as possible.
Exactly. I agree with you there. First game we have Sunday, though, Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. I'm not going to hold any strings back. When I see a plus next to the Pittsburgh Steelers, you feed that to me. Feed it.
Yeah, they're at home. It's the Tomlin spot, 16-9 straight up as an underdog at home, which is just an absurd stat. Like, you'd be lucky to – it'd be great if he was 500 as an underdog at home, like, outright. To be 16-9 is just ridiculous. I will, however, say that this Pittsburgh team is starting to get on my nerves a little bit. I feel like they've gotten a little lucky this season. They've That Rams game, Brett Maher missed 2 field goals and an extra point. 7 points he missed in a game that was
got cut.
Obviously a bad call by the officials in giving the Steelers the ball at the end of that game on the QB sneak. And while I don't think Stafford would have gone down and scored a touchdown, I do think Stafford could have gone down and scored a field goal if they had a competent field goal kicker who could have made the earlier field goals in the game. I do feel like that would have been within the realm of possibility, or at least overtime. Who knows? So, yeah, I think that this Pittsburgh team has gotten pretty lucky. They were lucky to beat the Ravens. They were lucky to beat the Browns. Although it was, you know, Mike Tomlin at home. That's what they do. They win the games ugly. They have the crazy TJ Watt strip sack or the TJ Watt interception in their own territory like they did with the Browns and the Rams wins. So definitely, I'm well aware Pittsburgh voodoo magic is strong. It would not surprise me at all if Pittsburgh wins this game. I am going to take Jacksonville, and I know it is It is certainly close. I do not have a lot of confidence in this pick, and I know I'm going against the trend. I will just say that I think this Jaguars team, going into New Orleans on a short week and kind of like significantly outplaying them, I know the game was close. Foster Moreau dropped the game-time touchdown. I understand. But nonetheless, like the fact that they did that on a short week, the Saints defense hadn't allowed an opening drive touchdown in like 18 games. And the Jaguars went right down the field with the ball first and scored a touchdown right away. It was just like a very tough, resilient, like we're for real performance. I think their loss to the Texans, you know, it's a division game. Weird things happen. We talk about that all the time on the show. And the Texans are better than people thought they were at the time. So I don't think that loss looks nearly as bad. And losing to the Chiefs, I mean, they have the best record in the NFL. Like, there's nothing wrong with that either. I think this Jaguars team is starting to remind me of the Joe Burrow Bengals. I'm starting to get that kind of vibe where, like, the quarterback ascends into the elite tier. They start becoming a complete team. And the Bengals in 2020 and – in 2021 and 2022,
yes,
the Bengals were, like, insane against the spread, like 70% against the spread or something like that, because they had risen to be one of the elite teams in the NFL, and the markets hadn't really, like, caught on to that, and it was kind of happening slowly. And I think the Jaguars, like the Bengals did in 2021, where they were – now, granted, the Steelers were favored, so it's not the same, but the Bengals went into Pittsburgh and won in Pittsburgh in 2021, and I kind of – I think that's going to happen here. I think Jacksonville goes in and wins, shows that they are like one of the elite teams in the NFL. And then, yes, the very next time Tomlin is a home underdog, I will absolutely be all over them as well.
I'm just sticking to the trend, but for Jacksonville, I completely agree with you. This is a game where they really have this chance to show the NFL world, hey, we're here and we're legit. Because look at the games too. I'm also picking Pittsburgh just because I feel like this is a schedule loss, kind of like what we saw to Detroit. I'm not saying Pittsburgh's going to whoop them. I'm just saying this is like a game where it's kind of like, you know what, hey, you're kind of brought back down to earth before you really catapult yourself forward. Because with Jacksonville as well, I know they haven't looked good, but you got San Francisco. They get my words mixed up. You have San Francisco coming up next. So it's just... this is a game where if it's like, hey, they dropped this one, but then I can see them getting like an upset win against the 49ers because we have no idea what's going on there.
Yeah, and look, certainly like, I mean, the Ravens are the number one team by DVOA. Randy, shout out to Randy. They are the number one team by DVOA in the NFL right now is the Baltimore Ravens, and they lost in Pittsburgh. So certainly anyone is capable of losing in Pittsburgh.
It's a simple expression of any given Sunday. But obviously, folks, as you guys know, Big Rat and I didn't record in the last time the home game was in Buffalo. Why? Because Daniel Jones didn't end up playing. So we don't record if Danny Dimes ain't in primetime. Danny Dimes was with a neck injury in primetime.
Yeah.
But his Giants, we don't know if he's going to play yet, are playing the Jets. I'm going to say this right now because the Jets have truly been one of the surprise teams of the year. I know Danny's just creaming his jeans hearing that expression right now. But with this game for the Jets, this is a true chance to show the world like what Detroit did against Carolina or what they did against the Falcons, where it's like, hey, you're playing an inferior opponent. There's a lot on the line considering bragging rights within the city of New York and the fact that they came off a big win against Philly. So for the Jets, I look at this as a huge chance to really like state your claim, because when it comes down to this game, look, I know both offenses, like they have their ups, ebbs and flows, but Breece Hall's been a freaking monster this year, even though we were wrong on that take, and which I know Danny's smiling ear to ear hearing. And the fact, too, with that, with the defenses, when it comes down to, hey, which defense do I trust to shut down the other offense more? I'm going Jets 10 times out of 10 in this matchup.
Yeah, I think this is a coin flip. This is kind of a fun atmosphere. I wish we had more of this in football. Like, both teams in New York, you know, like going to be a packed 50-50 stadium of both fans. Like, it's going to be like cool to see like both teams playing in what is claimed as their mutual home stadium. It's like you only see that in high school. You don't even really see it in college football. So I think this is really cool. I'm really excited for that dynamic. And I know I sound like such a nerd. I know they play this game every 4 years, but still, like, it's cool to have the game go on. So I remember people before the season started, one of the arguments they gave for liking the Jets win total is that AFC teams have 9 home games this year compared to 8 on the road, which was reversed last year. So AFC teams have 9 home games this year, and this is technically a Giants home game. The Giants are the home team in this game. Yeah, so technically the Jets got 10 home games this year, which is, you know, like very, very, very wild and unexpected. But nonetheless, I really like both teams in this spot. I think can win. I have a hard time picking this one. The Giants have been playing better. They should have beat Buffalo. They did beat the Commanders. I do think Tyrod Taylor is better than Daniel Jones as of now. That could change. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, look, how he's playing is not better than how Daniel Jones played last year, but is it better than what Daniel Jones was doing this season?
Yes.
And Jared Silverkleit, friend of the show, big-time Giants fan, he believes this too. And me and him both, like only me and him, a Giants and a Dolphins fan, would recognize this. When Tyrod came into that Dolphins game at the very end of the fourth quarter, like you could kind of start to see it. Like, everyone can go back and watch that tape from, like, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Dolphins' defense got 7 sacks that game, and they sacked Tyrod plenty. But there were just a few plays where Tyrod was escaping pressure better than Daniel Jones did, where he was making the difficult throw with a guy in his face better than Daniel Jones did. He converted a lot of key third downs. It was only, like, a few drives, but even then I kind of started noticing, oh, wow, like, I think Tyrod's really going to help this team. And then certainly, you know, against the Bills – and against the Commanders, it is kind of like prime Tyrod in Buffalo in the sense of they're not scoring a lot, but like the offense looks like they're getting first downs. Like they're constantly moving the ball. They're rarely punting. You know, obviously against the Bills, they fumbled on the Bills. They got stopped on downs on the 1 yard line twice. So that should have been at least like 15, 16 points. And for that reason, I think the Giants or the Jets could win this game. I have a hard time picking it. I'll go with the home team.
Yeah, I'm like in the same boat where it's a battle of both teams. It's just when it comes down to this game, it's which defense do I buy more stock into? And that's the New York Jets defense. That's all. Like, it's the who do you.
You didn't appreciate my joke.
Pardon me?
You didn't appreciate my joke. I said I'll take the home team.
Oh, yeah. Went over my head. I was on. I just did another podcast appearance before this, so I'm kind of like, not like you running on fumes, but just like the overall, like, whoo.
As everyone knows out there, the best thing you can do about a joke is retelling it, delayed after the fact. That obviously like maximizes the impact of the humor.
And we also, the name of the podcast title for the show is saying, I want the home team to win, which people gotta listen to about the 12:22 mark to figure out, hey, why did we get to this point? The next game on our docket is Carolina versus Houston. I'm going to say this right now. If you're feeling very risky for survival, the Houston Texans. I suffered my first strike last week. I took a major risk and it backfired. I took the Saints because I thought, hey, you know what? Like, I feel like it was a schedule loss for Jacksonville last week. It was a horrible kick by Tampa. Basically, I looked at that where it's like, now I have a strike. So basically, the last few weeks I've been kind of all over the place, but I've been doing pretty well. But that's the thing I'll say right now. It's not my survival pick of the week just because there's one team in mind I have, and I'll tell you who it is later on because they play in the 4 o'clock window. But I'm going to also call this game one thing only. This is a CJ Stroud revenge game. Go into Carolina and show them, hey, you could have taken me, but you didn't.
The reporting around this decision really fascinates me because obviously I've told people before I've compared this to kind of Tua and Herbert. I am not saying it's going to end up the same way. Because I was lower on Bryce Young than I was on Tua. I did still like Bryce, but I was really concerned by the size. Bryce Young is, we talked about this on the show, he's like much smaller than Tua was coming out. Tua was like 6'0", 6'1", 200 pounds. Bryce is like 5'10", 180. Like, it is a significant difference. They are not the same size. If they after the Dolphins-Panthers game, they hugged on the field. You can just see, like, Tua's just a lot bigger than him. Like, they're not.
I remember that.
So all the criticisms people gave of Tua being undersized coming out, the comp to Bryce is not exactly one-to-one because Bryce is even smaller than Tua is. However, it does remind me of the Tua and Herbert discussion back in the day. One of the things that frustrated me about it was this is not a finished story. Like, we don't decide these guys' careers based on seven games. If you did that in 2021, you would have thought that Mac Jones was better than Trevor Lawrence.
Oh, God, yes.
If you did that in 2022, then – well, actually, no, 2022 is kind of a weird example because the draft class was kind of wonky. But even if you did that in, let's say, I don't know, 2018. Yeah, 2018. Yes, good one. You would have said Baker Mayfield is better than Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Like, these guys' careers are not decided – based on how they do in their rookie season or the first six games of the season. And I love Stroud. You won't meet a bigger Stroud guy than me. I have a dynasty league where we draft college players. Mm-hmm. And I got CJ Stroud on my team back in 2021 before he even won the starting job. And there were a lot of people at the time. It's forgotten now. There were a lot of people at the time that thought he would get benched at Ohio State for Kyle McCord or for Quinn Ewers when Quinn Ewers was coming in. And Stroud ended up keeping the job. He ended up being the best quarterback on that team. And obviously, he's had a good career so far. So I'm a big, big Stroud guy. But I think it would be foolish to just completely decide that the race is over between them, much like it was very stupid to say with certainty that Herbert was better than Tua back then forever, because now it's kind of questionable again. And people thought it wasn't back then. And here we are a few years later, and it's a debate again. So things change quickly in the NFL. As far as the game, I like your pick. I don't have a good read on it. It's kind of rookie quarterback versus rookie quarterback games are very tricky because they can turn it over at any time.
Yeah.
So kind of don't really know what to do with this. I know Stroud has obviously been better. Both teams are coming off a bye in this game, which is kind of interesting. Like, you rarely see that.
Yeah.
Both teams are off a bye at the same time. Both rookie quarterbacks who really could benefit from a bye. I don't have a good read either way. I can lean towards the Texans, I guess, but I could absolutely see the Panthers getting their first win of the season here, but it's close. It's close.
Yeah, it's a weird spot. I just think it's the same thing too with like these teams. I'm just like, I'm looking at Houston and especially Stroud from that whole standpoint of, hey, you can go show the world, hey, for the, like, you know, the regular NFL fan, because I basically put the NFL fans in a few categories where there's the people that like just watch the Super Bowl, but they're not even fans. They just like, hey, they watch the one game a year and they're there for halftime. Then you get the fans that like they know stuff, but then they like they watch like every week, but they're not like dialed in. Then there are, and this is my podcast going to say it. Then there are the sick fucks like you and me who talk about this stuff 365. So from that standpoint, I'm saying it because like we know the whole stuff, and also too that weird like Wunderlich test, and especially too with the reports that Frank Reich wanted CJ Stroud.
Yeah,
it was David Tepper who picked Bryce Young.
Yeah, and that's never. You know, in general in football, it's like it's never good when the owner gets involved in the quarterback decision. And there were those reports that Josh McCown and Frank Reich really loved Stroud. They told Stroud, we'll find a court in Charlotte to play pickup together. Yeah, like it's not ideal. But again, Bryce Young's career is not over. Bryce Young has no help on that team. Like Adam Thielen is being asked to play like it's 2017 again because they truly just don't have anyone else. Like, it is not fair. Like, and I said this before the season, that I didn't think their offense was – it was not possible for their offense to play well because of Adam Thielen, Hayden Hurst, and DJ Chark being their top receiving options. So, it's just too early. It's just too early.
Exactly. But moving on to a game not too early. It's our matchup, buddy. We're the 1 o'clock window this time.
All right. Let's get
into it. I have one question for you. Are you worried about the chance of Miami overlooking this game because of what lies ahead across the pond in Germany next Sunday morning?
Yeah, you know, I've heard this from a few people. I would say no. I would say it was possible for that to be true, but I think a few things have changed. So for those who don't know, here's the – if you want to know what a sandwich spot or a trap game is in football, it kind of meets this definition. Last week was the Eagles game, a hyped-up game on primetime. There's this Patriots game. Then they go to the Chiefs in Germany. And then they have their bye. So, like,
and then truly, Vegas. Like,
what?
And then Vegas, and then I believe the Black Friday game, right?
Yeah, yeah. Then Vegas, and then the Black Friday game. So, in theory, you would think, okay, they will devote less energy to the Patriots game because the other games take a lot more priority. But I would say because of the bye week, I am not sure that they, like, I think they can kind of focus for this game because they don't have, like, a bunch of other games coming up with that bye week in between. I would also say that I think that the Patriots winning last week certainly raises their attention profile to the Fins of, you know, they just beat the Bills, who the Dolphins got crushed by. So I think that also makes it, like, a reason to not overlook them. The Jalen Ramsey is coming back.
Yeah, I saw that today.
This is his return. And quite obviously, I think that is going to be a very, very big deal. I think that is going to get a lot of attention, a lot of fanfare, and I think everyone's going to be hyped up. Also, like, this is a little inside baseball, but the defensive starters are going to get announced for this game. I don't know how other teams do it. The Dolphins alternate which side of the ball gets announced.
Patriots usually do offense, I think.
Patriots only do offense?
They usually. I think it varies, but you're talking to a guy who's only been to one game at Gillette Stadium, so I'm not too sure.
Okay, fair enough. Well, the Dolphins alternate between offense and defense every week, and they purposely like lined up the schedule so that they can announce the defense on Sunday. So they're going to announce Jalen Ramsey. It's going to get a massive ovation. Everyone's going to be juiced up, and I think there's going to be some energy for this game, especially defensively. For it being Jalen Ramsey's return, I think the defensive guys, I don't think they're thinking about Patrick Mahomes. I think they're going to get fired up for this one for that reason. And I think McDaniel realizes, too, that last week created a very big opportunity for the Dolphins with the Bills losing a game that the Dolphins had already won. The Bills lost at New England. The Dolphins already won at New England. So that is not a game that the Bills can make up. For example, they lost to the Jets. If we also lose at the Jets, then that kind of makes up for that Bills loss. It becomes equal for both teams. They can't make this one up because it's a team we already won in the same circumstance. Mm-hmm. So the only way the Bills can make it up back is if we lose this game and then the Bills beat you guys in Buffalo, then it becomes even again. And for that reason, I think that the McDaniel kind of realizes if we want to keep the stranglehold on the division, this is a very important game because the reason why that loss to New England for Buffalo was so big last week was that it was a division game. So I'm willing to say it sounds crazy. Like, in some ways, it's better for them long-term to win this game than to win the Chiefs game because it is so important to not have any other losses in the division this year if they want to win that division. Like, beating the Chiefs and getting tiebreaker is great, but if you don't win the AFC East, that doesn't matter. You'll never have tiebreaker with them in the first place. It'll be Buffalo.
You know, because ultimately, the end goal for everyone is to have a playoff game at home. That's the ultimate end goal and end game for every other team. So I completely agree with your reasoning as someone who's been in those shoes for a very, very long time. Obviously, I'm not now. I'll ask you in a minute about the offensive health because, look, Tyreek Hill appeared in the injury report and so did Jalen Waddle because I know he had the weird back injury against Philly. Yeah. New England, I'm going to say this right now. I know there are some Patriot fans that are in the whole boat of, like, playoffs are back on or, oh, they can do this and this. I look at this game from the perspective of being at a casino, and the Patriots basically had little to no money left, and they just won big on blackjack and roulette, and now they're kind of walking around with more money than they walked in with. It's like walking in with $50 and you're up to $400 or $500 at the casino. So winning this week is just them more or less playing with house money. Kind of like, you know, hey, they got nothing to lose. They're 2-5. If they go to 3-5 somehow, I'll say this right now, their next five games are extremely winnable. It's the Commanders. It's the Colts game, which is in Germany the following week. The bye week, then at the Giants, then Chargers, who look really wonky at the moment, and then the Steelers game before they play week 15 at home to Patrick Mahomes on Monday Night Football, ensuring that for the fourth straight year that the Patriots are going to lose the week of my birthday because that's just how life goes. So if they do win this game, I'm not saying they're not going to run that 5-0 table, but if they win Sunday, go to 3-5, and then go 3-2 down the stretch, you're 6-7 in the middle of Christmas, which isn't terrible, but it basically means that, hey, there are these games that are some games that are like up for grabs because their season so far has gone like this. Because you and I haven't spoken, we spoke last for Dallas. So they had the two games where I was like, okay, it is what it is. And they beat the Jets, then they got shit pumped by the Cowboys. Then they had a nervous breakdown against the Saints. I still don't know how to God that happened. And then they lost to Vegas, and then they beat Buffalo. So this is either a peak moment in the season where it's like, hey, they got a lucky win, or it's a moment of turning things around. Ultimately, though, I am going to go Miami just because they are coming off the bad loss to Philadelphia, where, look, Philadelphia was coming off a bad loss himself. So it's just like the circle of life or cycle of life repeating itself. And also to the fact that Mac Jones is 0-5 against the spread against the Miami Dolphins as well. Fun fact of the day. I think there is a chance that they keep this game close, but ultimately I'm going to say Miami's going to win this game. Like, let's throw a fun score out there. 21-13 for the Dolphins.
Wow, conveniently that fits very nicely in this little range of 9.5.
I see
what you did there, Mr. Griff. So
yes.
I agree. I do think the Dolphins take care of business. It wouldn't surprise me if the game is closer. The Dolphins so also one thing I forgot to say in my little rant about why they'll take the game seriously. The Dolphins are wearing their throwbacks for this game.
I did see that too. Patriots have only worn their white uniforms once this entire season.
And the Dolphins usually, you know, this was more so like in the days when like the team was like super mediocre and they needed anything to get the fans excited. And so by default, it would just be the throwback jerseys and they would play really well in the throwback jerseys. But I still do kind of believe in it as like a thing. So I do think that should also help. And
keep going.
So I just do still think it can help. Here's some Dolphin stats for you. Tua is 16-4 against the spread at home. Period. End dot. He's 17-3 straight up. They never, ever, ever lose games at home with Tua unless he gets hurt. Like, unless it's like the Bills game in 2021 where he broke his ribs and left the game in the first quarter and didn't come back. Or the Packers game on Christmas Day last year where he got concussed in the middle of the second quarter and then threw three interceptions. Like, and then didn't come back the rest of the year. Like, I think when Tua doesn't get hurt, they basically, like, don't lose at home.
Yeah.
And I think it's very underpriced in the market because they're also 16-4 against the spread. So a lot of these games, I think people are not pricing in their home field advantage. And they're kind of thinking, oh, no one goes to Miami games. If they don't have a big crowd atmosphere, they don't really have a home field advantage. The numbers don't lie. They have a great home field advantage when Tua is playing. And so I think that hasn't been accounted for by the market. So as a result, unless Tua – like, can I see Tua, like, having a bad game and throwing a few picks and we squeak out of there with a six-point win? Like, kind of the example would be, like, the Steelers on Sunday Night Football last year. Yeah, I can absolutely see something like that against the Patriots, division opponent, the rematch, all that stuff. But, you know, anything beyond that where it just kind of, like, leads to them – like, anything more serious than that, like – losing the game outright, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing it. Though the one thing that might help the Patriots is that the Dolphins have been very, very careful with injuries. Like they don't bring anybody back if they're not ready. They held out Connor Williams and Xavien Howard against the Eagles when both were apparently like borderline good to go. Contrast that to the Eagles, who Darius Slay played, Jalen Carter played, Jalen Hurts. Like, Reed Blankenship didn't play, but every other, like, big player they have that was on the injury report played. And the Dolphins sat all those guys out because they realized, even though it's a big game on Sunday Night Football, this is still an NFC non-conference game. This won't impact the division race as much as the Patriots and Chiefs game will. So they were kind of saving guys. And I think for that reason, they might save guys again. I think that would be a mistake in a division game, but they might. They might, like, Connor Williams might not play again. Xavien Howard might not play again. So
what about the receivers?
So I think Tyreek's coming back. Tyreek basically said today he's good to go. Waddle thing's been weird. Like, he basically didn't play in the preseason. He was kind of hurt the entire training camp. He's been hurt the whole season, really. Like, those back spasms didn't just start then. They were going on earlier in the year, too. He also had, like, a core muscle injury in September that was bothering him. Jalen Waddle is on pace for, like, 700 receiving yards this year. Like, 750. Like, I see people constantly say Tua has Tyreek and Waddle. Anyone can do that. Waddle's not playing that well. Like, Waddle hasn't had, like, an explosive game yet this season. And, I mean, he's a great player. Like, I'm sure it's coming. It wouldn't surprise me if we see it this Sunday. If they sell out to stop Tyreek Hill and Waddle finally has the 4 for 120 in a touchdown game. But I think they're both going to play.
And a revenge game for him, too, considering he did get concussed against the New England Patriots back in week 2 as well off the Marte Mapu hit. To the head.
Yes, very much so. And I think it should be fun. I'm expecting the Dolphins to win this game by 10 points or less. Whether they cover it by winning by 10 or they win by 7, I think it's going to be really, really close.
So, I think we'll this is kind of the game for New England where it's like last time, but you get rid of the like whole 17-3 kind of thing. I think it's going to be more of like a puncher's fight, but ultimately Miami gets that last like knockout shot.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think Mostert is not going to play as well as he did in that first game. I think Patriots are going to wise up to that. And I don't think they're going to let Raheem Mostert rush for like 150 yards. So
their run defense the last few weeks, minus Dallas and New Orleans for obvious reasons, has looked really good. Josh Jacobs wasn't as effective against the Patriots. And then last week, I know James Cook had a touchdown, but they weren't all that special. But yeah. But anyway, that's our game. Moving on to the next one, Tennessee and Atlanta. I'm going to say this right now. Atlanta has burned me the last 2 weeks. Week six, take them on the money line against Washington. They lose. Last week, pick the Bucs against them at home. The Falcons win. This week, it's a uniform bet. I know Ryan Tannehill's not playing, but you really going to tell me that Mike Vrabel is a home underdog after getting his red jacket with the Patriots in those Houston Oilers throwbacks is losing? No. And also, too, Arthur Smith deserves it after being a jackass to the media over his comments about Bijan Robinson's headache.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. I actually did pick the Falcons last week. I kind of like held out hope. And it was as much like a fade of the Bucs as it was a bet on the Falcons, so I can't take too much credit. But I do think that this week with the Titans, I do think agree with you that the Titans can win this one. It's not even that I'm a big Will Levis guy. He might not even play that well, but it's just that with that defense, I think they're really good at stopping the run. That's obviously big against Atlanta.
Which quarterback's going to fuck up more?
And yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Levis, sure. Can Levis implode and throw picks? Absolutely. What if Levis like just isn't asked to do much? What if he only throws the ball like 15 times and they just rely on Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears? So that's kind of the path for how I can see Levis keeping them in the game, even though he himself maybe not playing well. A good comparison would probably be Tua's debut, which was week 8 of the 2020 season against the Rams. He was coming off a bye. He had less than 100 passing yards, and the Dolphins dominated. It wasn't even close because the defense was that good, and the defense forced a lot of turnovers. Got a defensive touchdown, got a special teams return. You could see some wacky stuff like that, I think you could see in this game. So I like the Titans to get off the schneid. Kind of a must-win game for them at 2-4. They really can't lose this one. They're coming off a bye. I think the Falcons are a 50-50 team. They're going to alternate wins and losses all year. They just won, so now fade them.
Yep, exactly. That's it. And also, too, I feel like with Tennessee, if this truly is the last game of like their core together, you know guys like Derrick Henry are probably going to show out. You know, like a D-Hop, I think he finally has a game because he hasn't really done that much this year. So I like two of those players to do well, but it's kind of that thing where it's just, hey, Will, go in there, don't screw up, and – we're going to get a win. I think that's pretty much the moral of the message for this coming week in Nashville in those nice little throwback uniforms. Rivalry game alert, Green Bay versus Minnesota. I am sorry. I'm out on Jordan Love. He's just like the last 2 weeks has done like he threw identical game losing interceptions. And also as well, you made the Broncos look somewhat compatible, which, look, I don't know how you do that. So I got to go with the Vikings here in this game. I think Monday night was a true page turner for them where it's like, hey, Minnesota's not as bad as we think. It's just some of these big games aren't going to go their way, but they found one to go their way.
Yeah, I am going to disagree. Yeah, it's weird. It's interesting. We've had a few games that were actually kind of split on today. The Jacksonville game. This game, and there was another one, but I forget.
New England and Miami, of course.
Oh, on the spread. Well, yeah, but that was on the spread. That's different than on the winner.
I think Houston, Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I do kind of like Houston. I just don't think it's as much of a lock. Not that you said it was a lock. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not as strong on it as you are. So, yeah, I'm on the Packers here. They will make my Fab Five this week. For those listening, my Fab Five as of now is Packers, Jaguars. I do like the Titans. I haven't decided yet on them. They're in the back of my mind.
First two are the opposite of me.
For two of the three, yes. Just for two of the three, though. So I mean, we got more games to go. I think this is kind of the bottom of the market for the Packers. Like, this is – it's for the exact reasons you said. It's like they haven't looked good. They lost to the Raiders and the Broncos in back-to-back weeks. Everyone wants to fade them. Like, this is kind of the bottom of their market. They still did beat the Saints. They still came very close to beating the Falcons. They beat the shit out of the Bears. So they have some good things in their resume, excluding kind of the last few weeks. So for that reason, I'm kind of more optimistic that they can do something good in a division. This is a division game against a division opponent in Green Bay, kind of the Packers season, kind of a must-win spot. I do worry about Jordan Love against this Brian Flores defense, because the success I've had with betting Minnesota this year is that you can usually trust a Brian Flores defense to beat up on a bad quarterback. Like, that's like them against the Panthers was a good bet. For that reason, because Bryce is bad at this point in his career. That doesn't mean he's going to be bad forever. Again, no. I'm repeating myself. Similarly, when the Vikings played the Bears, I came very close to taking the Vikings in Survivor that week, but I ultimately decided not to. But I was very, very close because I thought this is a bad quarterback, a bad offense, and I think Brian Flores can really shut them down. And the Bears' offense was struggling before Fields got hurt. I mean, even before Fields got hurt. So I don't think that's the reason why the game went the way it did. I think the Vikings, you're kind of catching two teams at their opposite value right now. The
like Vikings crossroads.
Because the Vikings are at the top of their market. They just beat the Niners, who everyone thought was the best team in the league, you know, on Monday Night Football in front of a national audience. So they're at the peak of their market, and the Packers are at the bottom of their market because they lost to the Broncos, who everyone hates. So for that reason, I'm just going to take the Packers, not even for really good football logic, just on the basis of it's a division game. Anything can happen. One team's at their high, the other team's at their low. And I think this is where the tables turn and the Packers get a very important win at home. They need this game. They need this game badly. So I'm going to take Green Bay.
I also saw the total for this game is currently at 41.5. I kind of like the over for that. I don't know what it is.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, because, well, Aaron Jones, I guess this is one of the reasons I defend the Packers. Aaron Jones still hasn't really played. Like, he didn't play for a lot of the season early on. Yeah. Then on top of that, he comes back. They have their bye week, right? He comes back last week against the Broncos, right? He only played 11 snaps. So he didn't really play. The last time Aaron Jones was really integrated and playing a lot for this Packers team was week one. And he looked great. And that was when the Packers looked great. So I'm holding out hope that Aaron Jones will play more than 11 snaps this week. And he'll actually start to kind of get back to who he was. And he's probably their best player. So I do think that makes a big difference. Their best player on offense, at least.
Two things before we move on to this game. One, my fiance was brave enough to pick the Minnesota Vikings in Survival week 6.
Oh, wow. Respect.
Yeah. She also took Denver week 4 against Chicago.
Wow. Fading the Bears, basically.
And then we took the her and I took the Broncos in week 5. We picked the Jets week 5, excuse me. I can see this game going either way just because I look at the spread too. Remember week 1 as well, I was so on the Packers because they were plus money and I was like, they're plus money to the Bears? I'm like, the Bears aren't that good, and it kind of came to fruition. Dallas versus the LA Rams, I'm not making any qualms about this. Cowboys. I think the loss to the Niners really is going to be a turning point in their season to where it's not what we thought they were, but it's, hey, they learned from this, considering how they won against the Chargers. And now this week you're playing a Rams team that I think is not as good as they were getting out of the gates. I know they had a bit of a hot start, but I think this is a true game for Dallas to show the world, hey, we belong in that upper echelon talk of the NFC.
Yeah, the Rams, I was telling this to my brother last week. They're probably the... They're probably the team that I have the hardest time understanding. And for that reason, I think the Rams, they're confusing to me. Like, I never know when they're good. I never know when they're bad. I don't know how to read them. And for that reason, I really struggle to pick their games. It's like, I just don't know. Is this team going to go 5-12 again like they did last year? Is this team going to go 9-8 and make the playoffs? I have no clue.
It's kind of like McDonald's French fries. It's like, am I going to get hot fries? Am I going to get room temperature? Or am I going to get the bottom of the barrel that suck? You know, it's like that. You never know. Some weeks you get the crispy golden fries that are perfectly salted, and some weeks you get things that are not even edible because that's how much salt they are on them. It's like kind of like that.
Yeah, I think that the Rams, the Rams will probably like end up doing well, but it's gonna take some time. And for that reason, I mean, in this game, I think the Cowboys are gonna win the spread. I just have no idea. Like, I have no idea what it's gonna look like. I have no idea if they're gonna win by 3 or by 6 or by 10 or by 15 or lose. I think they're gonna win, but I just have a really hard time picking this one.
I could see this game being similar to last week where it's close, but then the Cowboys kind of just pull away and, like, I don't know, 27-17. Let's say that score.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You know, that's how I read it. I think we lost Big Rap for a second, but
27-17 sounds good. My bad.
Yes. Washington, Philly. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. You don't take big favorites as divisional games. So for that reason, give me the Eagles to win, but give me the Commanders to cover the +7.
Yeah, this is just standard operating procedure. Like, even even this season, how many times have we seen the favorite in the division game on the road lose? The Ravens lost to the Steelers. The Browns lost to the Steelers. Obviously, the Bills last week as 8.5-point favorites lost to the Patriots. So look, it would not shock me at all if Philly wins or even if Philly covers. I'm saying, as a general rule, this is just what you do. You take the home division dog by over a touchdown. That's just how it is in the NFL. You take it, it'll be right more often than not. And even if it doesn't hit this week, we'll take it again the next time. So simple as that. This is the play.
1,000%. Colts and Saints, this game is another tricky, tricky one to read for me. Because you have two teams that are kind of at the same crossroads where, like, the Saints, I don't know how to read them, where like last week they looked terrible and then they just something clicked and it's like, hey, we know how to use Derek Carr, so we're going to use Derek Carr. And then with the Colts, look, they got hosed, plain and simple. But I think this can be a very exciting game this week. I think that's how this game is going to go. But at the end of the day, I think I want to go with the Colts because the Saints, I don't know if the 34-0 win against New England was kind of a peak in the season or if it was once in a season kind of win, you know?
Yeah, this is tricky for me. The Saints, I actually do feel like up to now, they're the opposite of the Rams for me. I feel like I've read them pretty well. I thought they were a little overrated. I like the Falcons more in the division. I thought they were closer to the Bucs than the media made it seem. The Saints, by the way, a little betting trivia since we like to talk about it a lot on here. They are the worst team against the spread in the NFL. They are 1-6-1. That doesn't make sense. They're 1-5-1 against the spread in the NFL. They pushed against Carolina on Monday Night Football. They covered against your Patriots, obviously. They did not cover every other game. Literally every other game they didn't cover. They didn't cover against Jacksonville. They didn't cover against the Bucs. They didn't cover who's in between the Patriots and Jacksonville. Houston. It was a team they lost to. Houston, that's right. So this is the worst against the spread team in the NFL. Now, you can kind of look at that both ways. Was this team overrated at the start of the season?
Yes.
However, these numbers tend to reverse to the mean over time. The market does a better job of pricing them accurately, with the exception of the Tom Brady Bucs last year, who were 4-12-1 against the spread because they just could not stop overrating Tom Brady. And so they just couldn't like couldn't like get it in their heads that the team wasn't that good anymore. And because of that, the Bucks went 4-12-1 against the spread. So I think most of the time spreads tend to reverse to the mean. And if the Saints cover the spread, that typically means that kind of means the Saints are going to win this game. Shane Steichen, I think, has done a good job. They have a really good offense, despite the fact that Gardner Minshew has basically been the starter the entire year. Anthony Richardson. And, of course.
He's looked really good this year, though, on a serious note. He's played really well this year.
Yes. And now, like, what they're getting now that they didn't get last year is that Josh Downs on the other side is making a lot of plays. Like, a lot – people out there who, like, don't follow the NFL as closely as we do and maybe don't watch a lot of Colts games – Josh Downs is playing really, really well. He had a 5 for 125 and a touchdown last week. He had 97 yards against the Titans a few weeks before that. He's got 400 receiving yards on the season already. That is more than Jaylen Waddle, everyone. Josh Downs is currently outplaying Jaylen Waddle.
Third round pick out of North Carolina.
He's a really good player, and I think him and Pittman make for an exciting combo. And Shane Steichen's just a really good coach. Like, that, they're a great example of a team that looks well coached. They look like they maximize what they have, given their limitations at quarterback and given their limitations, like, on the defense. Like, they really look like they maximize what they have. So, it's hard. I feel like a Shane Steichen team versus a Dennis Allen team, the Shane Steichen team should win and should cover. But I also think the Saints are not going to keep not covering. So it's close. I'm going to very, very narrowly, just a gut feeling, going to take the Saints. But I mean, this is the game I'm probably least sure of all of them this weekend. There's a reason the spread is
same.
So low.
This though screams, it's like it's a get right for both, but ultimately I think it's more of a get right game for the Saints. And I'm also going to say this now, in 2 weeks, that Patriot Colt game in Germany is going to be very, very low scoring. So just heads up for that one. We take, you take European unders. But this game, I think it can go either way. But the ultimate thing with this is, how do the Saints look offensively? Because, look, they had some off-field troubles this week and with the Chris Olave stuff. And Michael Thomas, he's looked good, but he hasn't looked, like, back to even what he was in 2018. I know everyone likes to say, oh, Michael Thomas is like, oh, this and this. But it's just like Michael Thomas had a season for the ages back in 2019. So we'll ultimately wait and see. I think we're going to get a game sooner than later, though, where the Saints' offense just explodes. Because if you look at their next opponent after the Colts, because they've played three straight weeks now against the AFC South. Three straight weeks against the AFC South. Their next opponent is the Chicago Bears, and it's kind of that perfect punching bag as well. So I feel like if they don't get back on track this week, it'll definitely be next week against the Bears.
Yeah, the Saints, there's a lot of teams in the NFC like this. Like, it's pretty much the entire NFC South because they all play each other. And they play the AFC South.
Yeah.
So as a result, the games like look really, really, really winnable on their schedule. But the problem is the Saints are also a winnable opponent for those teams.
Yes.
So that's like you kind of like – I don't want to read it out loud to everyone because I think it's like really, really crazy. Here's the rest of the Saints schedule. 8 games after this Colts game. The Bears at the Vikings, at the Falcons – the Lions, okay, that's tough. The Panthers, the Giants, the Rams, the Bucks, and the Falcons again. That is one good team for sure in the Lions. The rest could all be below 500, all of them. So it is there for the Saints if they can get it together, but Derek Carr's not playing well. They don't look like a very well-coached team. Dennis Allen is like the worst coach in the NFL against the spread, and again, 1-5-1 this year. So I think the Saints can win this game. I think they can beat the Bears. I think they're just going to – they're going to be disappointing versus some of those other teams. I think that they're going to, like, give one of those teams their best day, kind of like how they gave Jacksonville their best day.
As Josh Allen throws an interception to Lavonte David, and I feel like we're close to another Stephon Diggs tablet meltdown. Look, I have to rub it in the skin of Buffalo Bills, and I get to do it next week. Greg, shout! That's a little side preview of what's to come for next week's episodes, everyone. But with the Saints, they're going to have a game down the line that they're going to just – nothing's going to go right. They're going to be miserable, kind of like what happened in that game they played against the Buccaneers where they lost 26-9. But then they're going to have a game probably – it could be – I could see it being that Vikings one where all just goes right again. You know, kind of like how they played against the Patriots where, look, you get a pick six. You're just dominating from start to finish. So they're going to be – the Saints are going to be the team Do you remember the Hail Mary game from 2012?
Yeah,
do you remember the Michael Silver photo afterwards of him looking at Aaron Rodgers, like shrugging his shoulders? I don't know if you can see me, where he's just like, what the fuck? That's pretty much the Saints this year, where it's kind of like they have one game where it's like, oh my God, look at them. And then they have one game where they're just like, what are you? It's like, actually, I'll say a better metaphor. Instead of saying will the real Slim Shady please stand up, it's will the real New Orleans Saints please stand up. You know?
Yeah. The problem is teams like that where you're kind of confused by them. You don't really know what they are. I kind of feel this way about the Rams too. You kind of just end the season where you started. Yep. It's like you go 8-9. You're inconsistent every week. And we still don't really know how good you are, which, you know, usually means you're probably not going to make the playoffs. Or if you do, you're going to get beaten in the playoffs pretty early.
Kind of like what happened to the Pittsburgh Steelers in Ben's last season in 2021.
Yeah, that's a good example. And I feel and like that's like the best case scenario because they at least won 9 games. Like it could be like Brady last year, except not get a home playoff game out of it.
Or like the New England Patriots last year, you know, where it's just a lot of inconsistencies that later on in December you're playing desperation must-win playoff games at the beginning of the month, and that by the end of the month you've done too much to yourself where you can't recoup fully.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
4 o'clock window. I'm sorry. Those Seattle uniforms are so nice. I can't fade them. Shout out Alex. Edge is the best. I am not fading the Seattle Seahawks in their retros. I am not doing it. I know Cleveland has looked good, but this also to me screams as well schedule loss for the Cleveland Browns. Because if you look at the last few weeks, look, they had the pass interference go their way, and they had the Jake Moody missed kick. So this and also too, I'm going to say this. I think the Seattle Seahawks are a legit good team. I'm not saying that they're a legit team to like where they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but I think the Seattle Seahawks are a team that's going to be very competitive and probably will make the playoffs.
Yeah, they seem like they're going to win 9 games or maybe even 10 games and make the playoffs. They seem like the classic like wild card playoff team. Like they're probably not going to win the division. They're probably going to make the playoffs, and we just know like exactly who they are. So I'm with you on this one. You see, we don't disagree on every game. I'm also on the fucking the Seahawks. Don't know why I cursed.
That's fine. That
was weird. it's like my brain was like struggling to get the word out, so it just like threw in a curse word. That seems to be. I'm on the Seahawks here too. I just can't see them consistently winning with PJ Walker. And trust me, I am the king of saying on the show over and over again. It's not about the quarterback. It's not always about the quarterback. Quarterbacks are overrated. But P.J. Walker, I don't think is as good as Gardner Minshew. And I know the Browns offense looked good last week. But a lot of P.J. Walker's underlying metrics are really bad. He's like really, really bad against – really, really bad against pressure. He has like I think he's the lowest PFF graded quarterback when not blitzed in the NFL, which is pretty crazy. So I cannot see them – consistently winning games with PJ Walker. I just don't think he's that good of a backup to have that sort of consistent success. So I think the Hawks are going to win. I'm unsure on the spread because the defense is good and it is kind of unpredictable to see like, you know, how many stops they're going to get in this game. Can the Browns backdoor it? Obviously. But I'm definitely on the Seahawks this game. I think it's going to be a good atmosphere. I think the Browns are going to lose. And then there's going to be a lot of talk about Deshaun Watson. This Deshaun Watson thing has been very weird. Stefanski said he was medically cleared when they played the Ravens. DTR, that morning, the morning of the Ravens game, he said he wasn't good to play. And it was like his opinion based on his evaluation of his arm. And DTR had to start. DTR did not get the first team reps in practice that week. DTR genuinely did not expect to play. So, and it sucked, by the way, like, sucks for DTR, man. Like, he might not get another start. And that's the tape that people have on him because of that circumstance. That's pretty shitty. That's really not good for his career. So Watson then says it's a shoulder injury. Okay. He happens to skip the next game, which was just, the hardest game on the Browns schedule against probably the best defense they'll play all year in San Francisco. But fine. Conveniently skips that. Comes back for the Colts game. Throws 2 picks. Gets put in concussion protocol, clears concussion protocol, but does not come back to the game because he says his shoulder's still not right. Stefanski that day said he would play against the Seahawks the following week.
And then yesterday we find out he is not playing against the Seahawks. This has been very weird. It doesn't make sense. It's been strange. And I'm not trying to accuse the guy of not wanting to play. Or even, I don't think it's as much not wanting to play. I think it's more not wanting to look bad. Like, he doesn't want to play and throw several picks and look bad. Like, he doesn't, he's fine playing against the Colts. And then he throws a couple interceptions and he changes his mind. And I think that if they're winning with PJ Walker, I think the Browns organization will kind of let this go. But if they ever start to, if they ever start to lose games or look bad, I think there'll be some internal pressure to get him back on the field.
I think so as well, because we all know at the end of the day that Kevin Stefanski's job is on the line as well when it comes to a game like this.
Yep, absolutely.
On the Seattle front, though, this game also is a must-win because their schedule going forward, as I need a Gabe Davis touchdown badly, goes Ravens, Commanders, but then this is where it gets tough. At the Rams, burst to the 49ers on Thanksgiving, at the Cowboys, at the Niners, burst the Eagles, at the Titans, burst the Steelers. That's a pretty big gauntlet coming up for the Seattle Seahawks. So I think if you really want to stay in the conversation to where it's not going to bite you come. So say if you can afford to lose like the San Francisco games or even the game to Dallas, to that where if you get this win now, it's like an insurance policy, like, you know, hey, save it for later. So I think that's another reason why they need to win this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree with you there.
Yeah, it's a uniform bet. It's another uniform bet, honestly. I look at those jerseys and I'm just like, there. If I were to take the spread, I probably would adjust the line to -2.5 instead of 3, just to give you that little buffer room there.
And look, I know we both agree that, you know, they're like the classic wild card team, not going to win their division, but going to make the playoffs. I will say, though, it is worth saying, if they win this game, they'll be 5-2. That's like one of the best records in the NFL, you know?
Their defense also is playing pretty solid this year. And also, too, offensively, Kenneth Walker III's looked really good. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and also Jackson Smith and Jigba finally starting to pick up as well.
He's starting to get involved. He's starting to make plays. And that's what makes them scary, like the possibility that he could play more.
And shout out Jake Bobo as well. I just love the name.
Great name.
Next up on the docket is Denver and Kansas City. This is my survival pick of the week for two reasons. One, excuse me, I've been talking a lot. One, Patrick Mahomes against the AFC West. You just take it. The other, I feel like this is the best chance to take the Chiefs, considering that their next two games are the Eagles and the Dolphins. So, I haven't used them yet. So if there's a spot to take the Eagle, if you have the chance to still take the Chiefs in survival, take it now. It's just with Kansas City, that +7 scares the hell out of me.
We're going to disagree again. Oh, no.
I hate picking Kansas City on the spread. They burned me 2 weeks ago on that fucking Butker field goal.
Look, trust me. I sound like an idiot for fading Patrick Mahomes in an AFC West game against the team that has not beaten the Chiefs in 10 years, or I guess 8 years to be exact. They have not beaten – the Broncos have not beaten the Chiefs since week 2 of the 2015 season with Peyton Manning. That was the last quarterback to beat the Chiefs. It has been 8 years of losses.
Yep.
Almost as bad as the Jets-Patriots one. I still think the Jets-Patriots one is worse because the Patriots are 7-0 against the Jets since Tom Brady left, which is just fucking hilarious. Like, even after Brady left, they're still 7-0 against the Jets. It's incredible. So I think that's more embarrassing than, like, never beating Patrick Mahomes. So, more clearly understandable. But I think that – I'm not saying the Broncos are going to win this game. But I am saying that I do think the Broncos will play better than they played on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks ago, which was an 11-point game in Kansas City. This is in Denver, and the spread is 7. So Vegas is telling you they think it'll be a closer game than that one was. I think the Broncos last year they lost to the Chiefs by 6 points and by 3 points. They care about this game a lot. This is the Denver Broncos Super Bowl. And I know this as a Dolphins fan whenever New England comes to town. And sure, the Dolphins were probably more capable – because the Dolphins are like a 500 team. The Broncos are probably not a 500 team. So I understand it's not 1-1. But I do think that Denver has a few ways that can keep this game closer. And we just said it with the Eagles-Commanders game. We never take the big division favorites on the road. Patrick Mahomes is probably the exception to the rule because he is 29-3 against the AFC West in his career. Mm-hmm. 29-3. That's better than Brady. Like, that's absurd. So I understand that this could look very stupid. When it comes to Survivor, like needing to guarantee that your team will win, it's hard to get much more reliable than Patrick Mahomes against the AFC West. But it is a road division game, and road division games are tricky. Weird things happen. The Bills just lost to New England last week, which was actually a bigger spread than this game is. So Vegas actually thought Patriots beating the Bills was more unlikely than Denver winning this weekend. So the Chiefs might win. It's very possible that Broncos cover but lose a heartbreaker. Can totally see that. But I expect the Broncos to put up a really good fight in this game. And I got Broncos plus 6.5 in my Fab Five.
Give me Chiefs to win, but Broncos to cover. How about that?
Deal. Split the difference.
Like, let's do 30-24.
Deal.
Yeah.
Everyone goes, you know, I'm happy.
This next one, I don't know how you're going to feel about it, but it is, as the ticker comes along, and I have to wait for the game. Oh, yes. San Francisco and Cincinnati. I'm going to pick Cincinnati, and I'm going to give you a couple reasons why, besides the obvious with the quarterback situation. Because Mike Florio made a really good point about this today, how Chargers-Chiefs last week, the Chiefs had 10 days of rest. The Chargers had 6. You have the exact same situation this week. You have the Bengals coming off their bye week, and you have the 49ers on 6 days of rest. This, like I said, I'm not confident in the pick. It's just when I look at stuff like that, and when, like I said, Florio made that point today, I'm like, you got to go with a team that's better rested. And plus 2 with Cincinnati, I think they really turned the corner, especially after the Jamar Chase comments with the 7-11 and stuff like that. I think, look, I don't want to call San Francisco fraudulent because I still think they are the best team in the NFC. But this is that weird schneid in the season where, look, lose this one, go into your bye week, and then see what happens from there. But with Cincinnati, like I said, I got to lean on the team that's more rested.
I agree with you. I mean, winning outright, I'm still kind of like figuring it out. But I do like the Bengals on the spread here. So I think the Bengals will cover. I definitely think they could win. I'm picking the Bengals to win this game. So we're in agreement here. The Bengals coming off a bye week, that's huge. You know, Joe Burrow was not healthy. So I know he was starting to play better against the Cardinals. It was kind of a little under discussed that in that Seahawks game, it still kind of looked like the Joe Burrow from the start of the season again. Like, he had like 2 really good drives early on, but the Bengals only scored 17 points. He completed like no passes down the field. And I believe he didn't even have like 200 passing yards. Like, it wasn't like immediately.
Yeah.
Just because they won that. But nonetheless, you give him a bye week. See, that's why I don't think it matters as much. Because even if he wasn't healthy back then, he got a bye week. So now he should be, in theory, the healthiest he's been the entire season. So as a result, I'm expecting the Bengals of old to show up here coming off a bye week. I think the Sam Darnold thing is big. Not just because he's probably a downgrade from Purdy, but apparently Purdy might play. I'm skeptical. Like, ever since the Tua thing, no one comes back within 1 week after a concussion. Like, Jimmy G didn't come back. Waddle didn't come back. There was another example. I forget who it was. But there's been a few examples this year of quarterbacks not making it back from concussion. It's like standard protocol now. You miss a game when you have a concussion. So I would be surprised if Brock Purdy is the exception to that rule, because it would just bring out a lot of heat to the Niners if something bad happens. So for that reason, I'm expecting Darnold to play. And I think that the uncertainty about whether Purdy's going to play or not is also going to kind of mess up the week of practice for Darnold. Yeah. It's not like you can just fully commit to Darnold getting all the first team reps because Purdy is still practicing. He practiced today. So, like, it's going to make it hard, I think, for Darnold to integrate. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Darnold plays bad in this game, but the very next game, he plays a lot better. Like, it wouldn't shock me if that's what happened.
The other thing with Purdy, too, is that San Francisco does have their bye next week as well. So I feel like this is the perfect chance. Like, don't play him, get ready, and then after the bye week when they have that game against Jacksonville, that's when you insert Brock Purdy back into the lineup. So this week is kind of take it for what it is when it comes to not playing him. And then, like I said, too, just because it's the rest factor, I know it doesn't mean much, too, but also look at San Francisco. the last 2 weeks they've had to travel cross country. They went to Cleveland and then they went to Minnesota and now they're back home.
It'll be interesting. It's fun. We kind of got a good 4 o'clock slate this week. It's like these games are juicy, you know?
The next one's not, though. Arizona and Baltimore. I am sorry, but Arizona is regressed to the mean of what we thought they were going to be. They're still playing tough, but it's just, and also too, I feel like, and I just thought of this too, Baltimore looks really, really good. Like you said, best team in DVOA, shout out Randy, but do you think that this is a potential letdown spot for the Ravens, or do you think that I'm with the Cardinals, it's regressed to the mean and that we'll probably see Kyler Murray back to form? Or even here's another example of what could happen. This could be a Patriots-Bills game from last year where all just goes right for the Cardinals and then the next day, like five guys from the team are gone.
Yeah, so I think that it's tricky for two reasons. The Ravens this year have actually kind of been not good as favorites. Like, they've had a little chiefism to them where they are, like, good as underdogs, but not, are good as short favorites, but they're not good as big favorites. They were big favorites against the Colts. They lost outright, not only covering. So usually I would say take the Cardinals in this spot. They're at home. Their last two games were on the road against the Rams and the Seahawks. So they're finally coming back home. This could be like a bounce back spot for them. But my problem is, the only debate for me is whether or not they cover. I cannot see the Ravens losing outright. They're just playing too well. And so for that reason, it's like, sure, can the Cardinals be splucky and lose by 7? Yeah, I can see it. But that's just not enough to get me excited. That's not enough to like get the juices flowing.
Yeah.
So for, you know, I could see the Cardinals covering, but I think the smart play is to pick the Ravens to win outright and probably to take the Ravens in the spread. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all if the Cardinals' offense struggles to score. So, or even if the Ravens' offense doesn't play as well as they did against the Lions, they could win this game like 20-7, and that covers.
Exactly. There are five teams that are 5-2 against the spread. That's the best spread record in the NFL right now. That is Jacksonville. That is Detroit. That is Kansas City. That is Miami. And that is Big Rats. Miami Dolphins. So you have all those teams against the spread. For the folks out there who don't know, there is just a big, you know what, I'm going to go full soliloquy here for a second. You get me. Hi, everybody. Griffin here for a second. Big Red had to step out. I had to take a phone call. But the big thing with this week's slate of games is, and also too, for you guys knowing the betting videos, last week was my worst week of betting, but at the same time too, I didn't care because my team lost. They had been losing. As I stand up and adjust myself, why? Because this chair is not fun to sit on. And also have a microphone with a nice little stand hand. So, you know what? It's good there. As, ooh, next week for Thursday Night Football, we get a pretty decent game, Titans and Steelers. I'm sure we'll talk about that. We'll elaborate on it as well. But you have a bunch of weird stuff. So, like, so far, if you want to think I'm wrong on what I'm thinking about picking for this, please tell me by tomorrow because I'm going to be – I always film the video on Fridays. I want to go Houston on the spread at that -3 number, or Tennessee on the spread and then Houston money line and then over under. I don't know. Like I was saying earlier, I like the Steelers and not Steelers. I like that Saints Colts game to go over just because look, Saints haven't scored a lot, but I feel like this could be the game where they really break out. We don't know yet. But the last like week 7 and week 8, both have been very, very interesting spread-wise because you get a couple of teams as we get a – let's do the dance, everyone. Let's do the dance. We get a false start offense number something. I can't hear Scott Novak because TV's muted, but that's right there, literally. I am staring. It is literally like four – the TV's like 3 feet away from me. That's why I changed this setup. I know before it used to be in my bedroom, but I changed it down to the basement so I could always watch the games live in time instead of like – having the game here, having a stream there. So that's how you know it is. But this week, it's just really wonky with what to go with for the spread. The other one I might do too is even instead of taking a Tennessee on the spread, might adjust to that Seattle number because I like it so much. And it's like I said too, I want to take those teams that are wearing the throwback uniforms as picks so I can insert their throwback logos into my video, you know? It's a fun little thing to do because why the hell not? Oh, man. But no, like, so far, Buffalo too, man. I need them on the minus. I took them at -7.5 in my spread pool, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. But Buffalo, you really got to win this game as an outsider, because why? Shit ain't not look pretty, especially if the Buccaneers win, which I would love to see, because Buffalo would just be coming back to earth. And that is it. But anyway, guys, we're going to bring Big Rat back because he is back in the room. And we're getting ready to talk some Sunday night football on NBC. Mike and Chris are the best on TV. I'm going to say this quite frankly, to be honest with you, Big Rat. I like the Chargers outright here because I feel like last week was like, you know, the Bears were this like cute little story. They got their win. But this is a game that the Chargers really need.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Chargers to bounce back.
I don't like the spread number, though, at 8.5.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, the Chargers, none of the two Chargers wins came by more than a touchdown. So now they're supposed to win by 8.5. I know the Bears are the Bears, and it's Tyson Bagent, but, like, I don't know. I have a hard time, like, understanding where it's going to go. So for that reason, I kind of just lean towards, you know, if you want to take the Chargers in a Survivor League, I don't mind that. I know it's a little risky. You can't really trust the Chargers, but still, this is about as good of a spot as you're going to have with the Chargers. I'd be shocked. Like, if you don't trust the Chargers here, when are you going to use them? Like, even home against Denver, I would not play the Chargers.
Oh, God, no.
So.
The other thing I was saying while you were gone, by the way, is next, on another side note, next Thursday night, I feel like we get the first good Thursday night game of the year, which is Tennessee and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Yeah. Although last week's Thursday game was good, although we weren't sure it was good.
That's what I meant. Like, it's like you're not sure of it, and after that we get Bears and Panthers, which, yeesh. But with the Chargers, though, like, this is another game they have to have, because you have at the Jets versus the Lions, which is not going to be a home game after what we saw the Lions fans do in Tampa, at the Packers versus the Ravens, and then at the Patriots versus the Broncos, at the Raiders versus the Bills, at the Broncos versus the Chiefs. If you lose this game for the Bears, this is going to be one that comes back to bite you in the ass come December time.
Yep, fully agree. I honestly, like, got nothing more to say.
Yeah, same. I'm the same way. And then Monday Night Football, the only thing I have to say about this game is Detroit Lions bounce back.
Yeah, I took the Lions in Survivor this week. Well, and I'll be clear. I took them in a very specific Survivor League where there's only 8 people left in this league. It's a small pool. It's not like I wouldn't do, in a larger pool, for sure, take risks, get ballsy, save the good teams for later in the year. This is a small pool where there's only 8 people left. So it's like anyone can win the pool at any given point. So I'm trying to be a little more cautious. And they're the team of all these big favorites. They're the one I trust the most. Obviously, Eagles and Chiefs, division games. Obviously, Chiefs. And also, like, yes, there's reason to use the Chiefs in Survivor because Mahomes doesn't lose to the AFC West. But I've already used the Chiefs, so couldn't you do that? Ravens, it's safe. It's certainly very safe. But them being bad as big favorites has just kind of bothered me. Them losing to the Colts outright kind of bothered me. And that was at home. So a little scared about that. A little scared about the Chargers. Like, I'm expecting them to win. I even said take them in Survivor. You can trust them in Survivor like 5 seconds ago. But personally, if I had to pick between the Chargers and the Lions, again, when there's only 8 people left in the pool, so, you know, 4 people have a bad week and we're down to the final 4. So if you're at maximum, if you're in a pool like mine where you want the most security, this is the game I have the most security of. The Lions versus the Raiders in Detroit. I don't care that Jimmy G's coming back. I thought this Raiders team was overrated going into last week anyways. They were like probably the worst 3-3 team in the NFL going into last week. All their wins have been by very, very close margins. I think on the road at Detroit, can they keep it competitive? Sure, maybe. But I don't think they're going to outright win the game. So come on, Lions. Take me on.
So mine has – my survival pool is 38 people. Fun fact, the Bills have knocked the most people out in weeks 5 and week 7. That includes my father and my sister. Can I quickly run through you the teams I've taken in survival? So week 1, I went Commanders. Week 2, I did the Bills. Week 3, I did the Niners. Week 4, I did the Jags.
Against.
That was the Atlanta game in London.
Oh, nice.
Week 5, I did the Jets. Once again, week 6, I did the Ravens in London. Week 7, I did the Saints, unfortunately. I have the Chiefs right now, but I'm looking at the Yahoo numbers. The Chiefs are only selected by 4.78% of people. And so far for Yahoo, 19% of people have taken the Ravens, 35% are on the Chargers, and only 16% are on the Lions in survival leagues.
36% on the Chargers. I don't know about that.
That kind of scares me. I would avoid the game for survival just because I don't trust the Chargers. But if I make it to next week, I'm going to stick with my Chiefs pick just because I haven't used them yet. And when I look at the Chiefs schedule, this is the spot I really like them in. You know, like I feel like because I'm not going to take them against the Dolphins and I'm not going to take them against the Eagles.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
Yeah. Get it. But no, but one more thing I realized too, it's kind of scary, is that we're at the halfway point of the season already.
Yeah. It creeps up on you, man. Football season goes by in a blur.
It really does.
Like in an absolute
Like
it's weird that next week will be after next week is more than half of the season.
It sucks. Which next week, Thursday, guys, it should be happening, but Big Rat will be back. But we're with some people. Greg Thompson, cover one, coming back. Danny will be here too. Why? Because we're gonna go through and do like a midterm report on all our teams and how we've done so far. Plus, we'll look ahead to week 9 of the NFL season as well. So stay tuned for that. But Big Rat, before we go, little college football talk. I said this take on Monday, and I want to hear what you have to say about this. I'm out on Caleb Williams.
You're out on Caleb Williams.
I just from like a standpoint of the hype going into the draft, I'm sure he's going to have a good career, but what I saw in that game against Utah, the big thing that stood out for me is the fact, too, that like while all his teammates were standing up and everything like that, it was him just sitting down on the sidelines. He seems like that kind of guy that's going to kind of come in and, you know, have the whole MJF, I'm better than you, and you know it mentality. So I'm kind of worried about that. But college football as a whole this year, I feel like there's a bunch of parity there to where you don't know who's going to be in it, even though I feel like Georgia may three-peat.
Yeah, this is a weird year because, like, Michigan has probably looked the best, but they've played no one. No. But it's this weird thing where it's like they've played no one, but they win every game by 30 points. And so it's like, well, what do I do with this? I don't know how meaningful this is. Like, Georgia looks sketchy against Auburn. It is a concern how they would play against Bama in the rematch. But obviously they're, you know, the two-time champs for a reason. I think picking Georgia makes sense just out of, like, security. Just out of, like, okay, I know that they don't look as good as they did the last 2 years, but there's no one better. Like, Ohio State, to me, is very flawed. Like, I would be shocked if Ohio State wins the national championship this year. They should have lost to Notre Dame. They did deserve to beat Penn State, but I think Penn State was a little overrated going in. And Kyle McCord just has looked really hit or miss. So I don't see them beating Michigan, and the game is in Michigan, by the way, this year. I don't see them beating those other top teams. Kyle McCord is not C.J. Stroud. As good as Marvin Harrison is, they seem very flawed to me. Like, they seem like a team that can lose to a random Big Ten opponent on any given week. So Georgia, Michigan, whoever wins the Pac-12, I'm still pretty big on Oregon. I think Oregon could beat Washington in the rematch if they rematch in the Pac-12 title game. So I think Oregon is a team to take seriously because they have a really good offense, but Dan Lanning is also like a really good defensive mind. So
yeah,
you can kind of like reliably trust both sides of the ball. And I guess you can with Washington too, to a certain degree, but I just feel like Oregon's a more balanced team. That game was in Washington. It'll be on a neutral field in the Pac-12 title game.
Las Vegas.
Yeah. And I think Oregon will benefit the most in a rematch. So I'm expecting Oregon, Georgia, Michigan, and the Texas OU winner. Whoever wins ends up winning the Big 12. Because I don't think Texas is going to lose again in the conference. OU might, but I don't think Texas will. So the winner, it's probably going to be Georgia, Michigan, Texas, Oregon is what I'm expecting. And I would expect
Florida State.
Yeah, I'm biased. I'm a Canes fan. so that is certainly tricky for me. Look, they barely beat Boston College. They should have lost to Clemson. Clemson blew a 27-yard field goal to win the game at home. 27 yards. We're not talking about 57 yards. 27 yards. Clemson blew it to win the game. So they should have lost to Clemson. It's not that they should have lost to BC, but they're so much better than BC that for them to only win by 2 points was pretty weird. So I know the LSU win looked good, but LSU has 2 losses already. LSU might get another one. Their defense is really, really bad. LSU still plays bad.
Really so bad.
So LSU is probably going to have another loss or two on the schedule. So my Hurricanes, you know, I get frustrated by them. It was an embarrassing couple of weeks there, but they had one of their biggest wins at home in a very long time against Clemson on Saturday. And that Clemson team took it to Florida State. And the game will be in Tallahassee. It won't be in Miami, but I think Miami can take it to Florida State too and at least give them a challenge. So I'm expecting Florida State to get a loss, whether it's against us or whether it's in the title game. And I don't know if their strength of schedule is going to make up for that, because I think the LSU win is not going to look as good as Michigan beating Ohio State, Oregon beating Washington, or Georgia beating Alabama. I think those are all going to be better wins.
I completely agree with you on those takes. It's just more or less. But if they do win the ACC, it's kind of like, hey, you're there. But if you have one loss, I feel like the Pac-12 will probably get in over the ACC, as weird as that sounds, just because I know the Pac-12 has been the redheaded stepchild of college football for years now.
Yeah, they have, and they never get teams in the playoff. It's very rare. It only happened like Oregon in the Marcus Mariota year, Washington.
But they got smoked by Alabama.
Well, they got smoked by Alabama with Chris Peterson as the head coach. So it very, very rarely happens. It didn't happen with USC the last few years or Utah the last few years when they got close. They never get teams in the playoff. I think this year is different, though, because there's so many good teams in the Pac-12. Like, there's 7 ranked teams in the Pac-12 between UCLA and Oregon State and Washington State and USC and Oregon and Washington. And certainly I missed someone in there, but I'm struggling to remember who it is. And, oh, Utah. That's who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many good teams in the Pac-12 that I do think the winner of the Pac-12 this year will get more respect. And I think their strength of schedule will get them in the playoff.
Yeah, like to next year where Utah going into the Big 12, I feel like they're going to be ready to compete with the best of the best in the Pac-12, in the Big 12, excuse me, which I don't know who necessarily that's going to be, because obviously the two big dogs are leaving the conference, obviously, yeah. In Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. But I feel like this Saturday's game, Oregon versus Utah, is huge to determining, though, who's going to be in Las Vegas that first Friday in December.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Well, Big Rat, I appreciate you being the trooper that you were tonight. We got this episode in the bag. I got to look it up again, but it's 2:58. I do this all the time, guys, because my memory right now is pretty much mush. But you know what? I was, as my YouTube app waits the download, I was right. This has been episode number 258 of YWC Football Talk, guys. Enjoy your weeks. Patriots recap episode, McGarvin, and probably Pat. We just have to confirm a few things coming. Dave Morisuti will be back because it is CFL playoff season. And then, like I said, guys, the AFC East fireworks are coming back next week, Thursday night. Stay tuned for all of that. Enjoy your nights. In case we don't talk before then, have a safe and happy Halloween. That's why the fonts were all scary looking tonight.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.